Morning, everybody. This is a reading from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 14 through 21. And they had just gotten in a boat. Now the disciples had forgotten to bring any bread, and they had only one loaf with them in the boat. And he cautioned them, saying, "Watch out! Beware the yeast of the Pharisees and the yeast of Herod." They said to one another, "It is because we have no bread." And becoming aware of it, Jesus said to them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes and fail to see? Do you have ears and fail to hear? And do you not remember? When I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect?" They said to him, 12. "And the seven for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect?" And they said to him, 7. Then he said to them, "Do you not yet understand?" In the past few weeks, I've been reading and rereading the Gospel of Mark in my life transformation group that Robbie and Chuck and I are doing. And each time I read through any passage of Scripture, and in this case, the Gospel of Mark, I find that I always encounter something new and different in the text. It's always fresh. And God is always speaking to us through Scripture in different ways, in new ways, in ways that are relevant to our situation. This last time I was reading through the Gospel of Mark, I noticed a critical moment in the story, a key scene where the world turns. You could say that there are a lot of moments like these in Mark. Critical moments, a fulcrum on which the whole text hinges. Maybe you'd argue that it's the scene in the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus is praying and the disciples are falling asleep. Or you could argue that a pivotal moment in Mark is Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem and the healing of Bartimaeus. Maybe it's Jesus' healing of the man with a withered hand in the synagogue in chapter 3. When the Pharisees turned totally against Jesus and decided to destroy him. The transfiguration is a pivotal moment in the scripture. And of course, obviously the biggest pivot ever is the crucifixion and the empty tomb. But reading through the story this time, reading Mark again, I realize that for Mark, and for Jesus, one of the most important moments in the story is one that I honestly have always sort of skimmed over and not paid a lot of attention to. It's a story that hasn't quite fit into my worldview. And maybe it hasn't fit into yours either. It turns out that for Jesus, one of the key moments of revelation, one of the key ways to understand what he's all about is when he feeds the 5,000 and the 4,000. When he multiplies the loaves and fishes and provides for people who were out in the wilderness and had nothing to eat. In our reading this morning, we hear about Jesus and his disciples immediately after Jesus had fed the 4,000. They're in the boat. And as they're traveling out along on the water, the disciples start worrying. Because they realize that on their way to the boat, they didn't think to stop and get any bread. So they're talking amongst themselves. "Ah, man, we didn't go to the grocery store before we left. We just raced out of there. What are we going to eat? This is a long trip. It's going to take us a while to get across the sea. We're going to be hungry." But, you know, maybe they're worried about being hungry. But there's something more important than hunger, even. Because, you know, Jesus' disciples were disciples. And they probably knew how to fast. That was one of the things you did when you were a disciple, right? You fasted as part of the gig. So they know how to go a few days without food. But the more important question than what are we going to eat is, isn't Jesus going to be disappointed in us for not thinking to pick up bread, to pick up food from the supermarket before we left town? And so Jesus, well, it's a small boat. I don't think it's a big boat. So Jesus notices the disciples are whispering to one another and discussing things in low tones, and it's a bit tense. And so Jesus asks them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Why are you worried about this?" He says, "Do you not see? Do you still not understand? Are your hearts made of stone? Do your eyes and ears not work? Don't you remember? Don't you remember when I broke the bread for 5,000? When I did that, we had five loaves and we fed the 5,000 people. And how much did we have leftovers?" 12 baskets, Jesus," said the disciples. "And when we broke the seven loaves for the 4,000 just the other day, how many basketfuls of leftovers were there?" "Seven, Jesus." And Jesus said, "Do you still not understand? Do you still not see what I'm about? Do you still not see that God, who is present with you, is the same God who fed your fathers and mothers in the desert of Sinai? This is the God who fed you in the wilderness with manna from heaven. This is the God who gave you so much meat when you asked for it that it came out your noses and you got sick of it. Do you still not perceive? Do you still not understand what you're dealing with here? You don't need to be worrying about bread. You don't need to be worrying about how we're going to get by, disciples. The God you serve, my Father, is the God of manna. He's the God who provides for his children. So, you're worried about bread. We're worried about bread. I'm worried about bread. I'm worried about how we're going to get through this. Maybe not in terms of the bare necessities. Many of us are lucky enough not to be worrying about where our next meal is coming from. But we're nervous too. We're nervous that there's not going to be enough. We're worried that this country that we live in, that our communities are not going to get what they need, that this church maybe isn't going to make it. We're afraid that, well, maybe we won't grow. Maybe the church is going to have to close someday. Maybe we're not going to make it. Maybe our society has become so secular that it doesn't have any use for the gospel anymore. Maybe. Maybe we're done for. Maybe we forgot the bread. Where are we going to get that bread of life from? It's interesting because Jesus is actually the one who starts the conversation, right? The disciples hadn't even remembered that they forgot. They hadn't even remembered that they forgot the bread, right? They didn't even realize they didn't have bread until Jesus said something to them. Until Jesus used a bread metaphor. Jesus said, "Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod." Right? Because right before they got on the boat, diligent readers might have looked back and seen that Jesus had just been debating the Pharisees. The Pharisees had been demanding that Jesus give them a sign from heaven to prove that he was indeed the Messiah, that Jesus was the one who God sent to Israel. And Jesus, when the Pharisees asked him for a sign, for a demonstration of power and wonder, Jesus said, "Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly, I tell you, no sign will be given to it." And that's when Jesus left and got on the boat. And the disciples forgot the bread. Because when you drop the mic like that, you move quickly. And it's interesting, right? Because Jesus had just performed an enormous sign, right? Just a day or two before, probably. He just fed 4,000 people with 7 loaves of bread and had 7 baskets of leftovers afterwards. So Jesus had just performed a huge miracle, right? That modern people like us find hard to believe nowadays. Hard to believe this could have even happened. So, I mean, there are different theories about how the feeding of the thousands happened, right? According to the laws of physics, it's hard for some of us to believe that this literally happened. And so there are theories, in addition to the supernatural, like, no, he literally broke the bread and passed it out. There are other theories, like, well, maybe when Jesus and the disciples shared what they had, it encouraged everyone else to share what they had. And so there was enough. Maybe. It's this miraculous thing either way that today we have a tough time making sense of. And yet, when the Pharisees come to Jesus and say, "Give us a sign, Rabbi. We want to believe you're the Messiah. If you just show us some thunder and lightning, please. Show us some fire and smoke." You know, in the Torah, it says that God showed our forefathers and foremothers a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night to guide us through the wilderness. So please, if you will, can you just show us a pillar of fire? We want to know it's really you. And Jesus says, "Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly, I tell you, no sign will be given it." He shut them down. And this doesn't just happen once, right? This is a consistent thing. Throughout the Gospels, and specifically in the Gospel of Mark, when people come to Jesus to test him, when people come to Jesus asking for a sign, he turns them down. He will not perform for them. And yet Jesus is performing miracles all the time. He's healing people. He's feeding people. He's changing people's lives. He's casting out demons. He's changing hearts and minds. He's turning people towards God. So what's up with that? Why would Jesus be so full of miracles and yet refuse to perform signs for those who questioned him, who want to test him? Do you still not understand? Why are you talking about having no bread? Are your hearts hardened? When Jesus performs miracles in the Gospel of Mark, it's consistent throughout the gospel that a necessary requisite for these miracles, for these signs of healing and presence and power from God, a necessary requisite is faith. It says that when Jesus went back to his hometown in Nazareth, people took offense at him because he was just one of the old boys from town. He had grown up there. Everybody knew his parents. They knew his mom and his brother and sisters. And they were like, who is this guy that is doing all these mighty deeds of power? Who does he think he is? And it says Jesus was not able to perform many miracles there. It says, you know, kind of offhandedly, yeah, you know, he just healed a few people, but nothing too big, you know. Which, for me, if I saw someone heal a few people, to me, that'd be pretty big. Right? But for Jesus, he just healed a few people. Just a few. Because their unbelief was so great. Because there's such a distrust of him. A desire to test him and to judge him. Mark says that Jesus was unable to perform many wonders there. It doesn't say he chose not to, right? It says he couldn't perform many great works there. Just a few healings because of their unbelief. And then you look at the places where people are healed, where miracles do occur. You look at the crowds who have been with him for days out in the wilderness and had nothing to eat. They believed in him. They trusted him. They were following him. They wanted to be with Jesus. And so when the disciples say, look, Jesus, we're out here in the middle of nowhere. You should send these people home or to the surrounding villages so they can get some food. Jesus says, look, disciples, that's far. That's like a mile. People are going to faint. People aren't going to make it to the surrounding villages. You give them something to eat. You give them something to eat. We're going to provide for these folks. Well, Jesus, all we have is a few loaves. Do you not yet understand? The loaves are enough. The loaves are enough for those who trust in Jesus, for those who trust in God. The loaves are enough for the man with the withered hand, who Jesus met in the synagogue that day and healed him, even though it was the Sabbath. The loaves are enough for the woman with chronic bleeding that excluded her from religious life and made her a pariah, who touched Jesus, trusting that if she could just touch him, if she could just touch the hem of his garment, she would be healed from the bleeding that had kept her on the outside, kept her isolated and alone and impoverished for 12 years. The bread was enough. So as we are gathered here as disciples of Jesus, as friends of Jesus, as his people, as we're gathered together in this time of global and national crisis, of economic and political and health uncertainty, the bread is enough. We have Jesus here in the boat with us. Jesus is the bread of life. He's broken for us. Multiplied for us, if we will believe him, if we will trust him, if we will stop worrying about how bad things look, and remember how big God is, how much bigger God is than our circumstance, how much more loving and beautiful God is than our fearful imagination. The bread is enough. Don't you remember? Don't you remember what God has already done for you? Don't you remember the ways that God has already brought you through? I need to be reminded. I need to remember how many times I felt like I couldn't go any further. I felt like I was hopeless. Like there was no way I could get where I wanted to go or be the person that I wanted to be. But the bread was enough. Jesus was enough. Trusting him was enough. More than enough. There were baskets and baskets of leftovers. There was enough for me and plenty to share. There was grace and life and resources overflowing. When we're scared, when we're angry, and when we trust ourselves and our own wisdom more than God, it's tempting to want to test God. In our hearts, in our minds, to say to God, send me a sign, Lord. I really don't trust you. So if you're going to convince me, I need you to send me a sign. I need you to make it clear. I need you to make it unambiguous. I need you to prove it to me. And to those frightened, self-assured, apparently wise people who challenged Jesus in this way, what did Jesus say? No, I'm not giving you a sign. I'm not proving anything to you. Have you ever experienced that? Have you ever been praying and asking God to prove it to you? Have you ever said, God, just do this thing for me. Just show me and I'll believe. And it feels like heaven is empty and that faith is a lie. But the bread is enough. If rather than seeking to test Jesus, seeking to prove God, to remove ambiguity, to reassure ourselves and to feel safe and secure and smart, if we'll trust Jesus, without surefire proof, without mathematical certainty, if we'll trust him, if we'll love him, if we'll humble ourselves and be his friends, if we'll let go of our worry and know that we follow the God who fed the people of Israel in the desert, the God who raised Jesus from the dead, the God who created the whole universe, we'll know that the bread is enough. And we'll be healed. We'll be fed in all the ways that are important. And there will be basketfuls of leftovers for us to share with the hungry, those who are still seeking, those who are still thirsty. We will have leftovers to lay before them. Joy, peace, an abundant life, a testimony of how God has worked in our lives, a willingness to work for others. So watch out. Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and of Herod, the puffed up pride that says, God, why don't you prove it to me? Because Jesus has exposed that kind of pride. It masquerades as strength, but it's weakness. It's weakness, it's fear, it's smallness, it's ignorance. It's a refusal to let go and trust the only one who is worthy of absolute trust. And it's hard. Because as we know from the ending of the story, from the ending of the Gospels, from the story of the book of Acts, and from the story of our Quaker ancestors who suffered for their faith, we know that God will take care of us and that the bread is enough, but it doesn't mean that things are always going to go the way we want them to go. It doesn't mean we won't suffer. It doesn't mean we won't die. But it does mean that we get to participate in the resurrection. We get to participate in a life beyond these present troubles. And it's that life that empowers us now to live fully and joyfully, even in the midst of this situation. The bread is enough.